Careless activities by people at sea and on land have created the dire state of the oceans today. Routine activities on land and water contribute to 6.4 million tons of debris entering the ocean every year. If you care, you will go to www.keepoceansclean.org and see what you can do to make a difference. Thank you.
Paul, are you okay, honey? You look a little pale and sweaty.
Well, I feel a little pressure in the center of my chest, and I'm a bit nauseous.
Should I call an ambulance?
What? For a little indigestion? I'll be okay. Don't deny the warning signs of a heart attack.
Pressure in the chest, neck, arms, and jaw.
Pale, cool, and sweaty skin.
Nausea, shortness of breath, and dizziness.
Contact 911 or your local EMS service immediately.
Brought to you by your partners in emergency care, University Hospital at Stony Brook.
And this is radio station WUSB, which happens to be in Stony Brook. You know what? That's not a legal ID. We're WUSB Stony Brook. There you go. At 90.1 FM and 107.3. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. That means only one thing. It's time, once again, for Off the Wall. get a drum roll? There we go. General Manager, give it up. Oh, yes. The off-the-wall theme. We could just sit here and listen to it every time, but then we wouldn't do a show. The show must go on. It's off the wall. Emmanuel here, joined by Kyle.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. Absolutely. There's a bunch of interesting things going on. You know, Donald Trump just fired Comey and the FBI director. But we're not going to talk about that this week because we have more important things to talk about.
So no one's leading any investigations right now?
Well, I don't know. Somebody's investigating somebody. But, you know, it's going to keep going on. We want to do something a little bit different.
Yeah, let's let the dust settle with that.
Yeah, we've had so much of it, just constant. And you can tune almost anywhere and hear talk about the craziness that's going on. We want to talk about some of the fun things that are going on, because there have been so many of them lately. Kyle, congratulations on finishing the five-borough bike ride.
Well, yeah, I was with you.
Yes.
I joined you.
I'm expecting congratulations from you.
Congratulations on a strong finish. You were, like, leading the pack.
I was not leading the pack.
I think you won. Okay. It wasn't a race.
Everyone calls it a race. What we're talking about, folks, in New York City, there are five boroughs. Can you name the five boroughs, Kyle?
Sure. Manhattan, Queens, Bronx, Brooklyn, not Staten Island.
In alphabetical order, if you'd let me finish
Harlem,
my
Bronx,
sentence.
No, wait. Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, Manhattan, Harlem.
Okay, Harlem is not a borough.
Staten Island is not a borough.
Yes, it is a borough. I just keep saying I think it should be part of New Jersey, but it's most definitely a borough. Otherwise, we wouldn't go there. So it's the five-borough bike ride. It's 40 miles. It's amazing to me how many people think it's a race, and it's also amazing to me how many people respect you for doing it. I mean, people should respect you for doing it, but it, you know, for us, it's really not that difficult. It's gotten easier over the years.
Oh, yeah. Well, it helps to know the course a little bit. And that hasn't changed. Manhattan and New York is as it was a year ago. It was a little crowded. There were a lot of people this year.
32,000 people.
Can you believe that? Going down the street.
That is something else. But hey, we added two more to the mix this year. In fact, we invited them into the studio. Our friends from the neighborhood, Andrew and Cole Fortier, join us tonight. Greetings, guys.
Greetings.
Thanks for having us.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys also rode on the five-borough bike ride this year.
You are certainly right.
We saw you there.
We were following you.
Yes.
You were leading the pack.
We were trying to keep
up
with you.
Okay, let's just stop this by leading the pack. Okay, what happened was I was paranoid because I thought I wasn't going to keep up, and I overcompensated, and I wound up speeding ahead.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because we talked about this last week. We talked about getting in shape. We talked about eating right. We talked about just getting healthy, and I've been kind of focusing on that this year, doing cross training.
Also, getting past encumbrances and your own sort of limitations. Maybe not realizing you are capable when you do have that ability.
Right, not eating as much Boston cream pie every night, or things like that. And you feel the difference, and it takes time. It takes months, but you do feel the difference. And, you know, weight loss doesn't always happen the way you expect it to. Sometimes it even goes up a little bit. But I noticed such a difference this year at the ride because I was able to do things I was never able to do before. This is my fifth one. For instance, I could never go over the Verrazano Bridge, which is a long bridge, a high hill.
Oh, yeah. The finale.
I had to always rest for about 15 minutes before I did that. This year I didn't. I just kept going, and it felt great. But you guys, your father and son,
right.
Andrew and Cole, and you're from the area, and you went into the city to do this for the first time. What are your impressions of it?
Well, go ahead.
You
Cole.
Want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was quite surprised, actually. I mean, you know, when you hear that it's 40 miles, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, my God, 40 miles. I don't think I can handle it. I mean, like, you know, going back to what you were saying about, you know, health and getting healthy for it, I really, you know, was concentrated. And I ride my bike a lot, but I was really concentrated on doing much longer bike rides over some more hills. for practice. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it really didn't affect it. I was still very capable to do the bike ride. I mean, 40 miles doesn't feel like a lot. You start the bike ride at 6th Avenue. You go all the way up into Harlem, all the way uptown.
Don't forget Central Park.
And, well, of course.
All of Central Park.
Central Park, yes, definitely. That's important. But, I mean, that flies by. It really does. I mean, you don't expect it to be...
The most amazing thing is going up up 6th Avenue, because you see all of Manhattan.
That's true.
Unfolding in front of you. You see Radio City Music Hall. You pass NBC. You just go up this long, straight, flat avenue, and, you know, the city is sleeping. It's Sunday morning. We start at, 7:30 in the morning?
Yeah,
I'm never up at that time.
Yeah.
I'm up until that time, but I'm never up at that time.
Right, yes.
And so, yeah, we're all riding up, you know, with all these people around us. And it's just right there, it sets the tone.
It really does.
Yeah.
It's an incredible energy. That's one thing that I noticed. I remember on the ride to the starting line, we were a couple miles from the starting line, and we were taking a ride. And it's first thing in the morning, early in the morning, and all I remember thinking is, what was I thinking? It was so cold. I was freezing. I didn't dress warm enough. And Cole and I are, you know, sort of racing down to get to the starting line. And I thought to myself, if this is like this for the whole remainder of this ride, it's going to be torture. And I was concerned. But when we got there to the starting line, and there was thousands and thousands of people, and we must have been about a half a mile from the start, I would say, at least,
yeah,
before we started. And I ran into the 7-Eleven to get us coffee, and I was a little bit nervous. I was in the 7-Eleven. It was really quiet. And then I got the coffee, got everything, come out, open the door, and it was like a million penguins talking. It just it was the most incredible, surreal moment for me. And I got over, and we had our coffee, and the energy was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that when you take a bike ride through New York City like we did, and you start off heading up, I mean, you drive. We rode 40 miles. Technically, we probably rode about 50 miles.
Yes.
But we rode 40 miles. Now, if someone said, you know, you got to ride from, you know, here to New York, which is probably about 40, 50 miles, it would probably be horrific. But it just seemed to go so fast.
Yeah.
I did not feel for one moment, oh, this isn't going to happen. It was an incredible...
Except for when we were riding to the ride.
Yeah.
Going down the East River.
Right.
And it was windy, having your doubts.
Yeah, it was windy and cold.
Yeah.
But there really is something about that camaraderie.
Absolutely.
That comes
Absolutely,
out. Yeah. Everybody's there, like you said, that chatter, that fervor.
How about when we cross into the a different borough,
mm-hmm,
and the cheerleaders are there, and the band's playing, and
yeah,
you feel like, holy cow, everyone's, you know, congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are waving at you as you go by, like you just won a war or something, and it's, you know, okay, I'm just riding my bike, but thank you. It's, I mean, people really do respect you for doing this,
right,
and to me, at least, it just feels like fun, and I wonder if other things, like running a marathon, feel that way. I think that's probably a lot harder.
I would think so.
Yeah, the ride itself, Bike New York, and... The team that puts it on is really phenomenal. They support everybody, and it's really about education and getting more people out on their bikes. That's the Bike New York's mission, and that's who benefits from everybody that participates. And they really do take care of everybody of all skill level and familiarity with the city or an event like this. Or this specific event, so it's really cool.
Every year it seems to get the city in general seems to get better infrastructure for bikes. I've noticed more bike traffic signals than before.
Protected lanes.
And you know, there are all kinds of problems still with motorists and pedestrians, but I think it's getting better. And I think, you know, a lot of the responsibility lies with bicyclists as well to make sure their presence is known, to make sure their intentions are known.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a single problem. I don't think, Kyle, you had a single problem with a motorist. People kept their distance. We didn't get honked at. But I know there are problems. I'm not saying there aren't. But I do think the communication is improving. And we have a long way to go. but it's good to see that we're moving in that direction. And yes, the Bike NYC people are phenomenal in getting that done. Just you were mentioning the cheerleading that people would do as you pass by, and these guys are there for you. They're there to help you if something happens. They're there to make sure you keep going, to inject some humor into the ride as you're chugging along.
Sure, yeah. 50 more miles. That's right.
50 more miles. It's a 40-mile ride. Wow. But yeah, so you go up Sixth Avenue, then you go through Central Park lengthwise. There's a couple of hills there. You know, the first hills that I guess you would experience.
It's a great hill to go down.
Central Park.
Yeah, yeah. And your encounter with joggers there, too, which sometimes is hostile and sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
Then you cut through Harlem, which is my favorite part. I think your favorite
Mine
part, too.
Mine, too, absolutely.
Yeah.
Harlem's great.
And everybody's going to church there, and people are very friendly and waving. You cut over to the east. You go over your first bridge into the Bronx. You only stay in the Bronx for like a minute because you loop right around and go back over a different bridge. And then you're going downtown on the FDR Drive, which fortunately they've cleared of cars in the southbound lane. So you don't have to worry about that. There are cars coming in the northbound lane. Sometimes they honk and wave. And it's just kind of trippy being on the FDR Drive with nothing but bicycles.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
And then you go through this, you go underneath this building, and everybody starts making noise because it's like
Echo.
A tunnel, and it's that is just one of the more fun parts.
That was a blast. I had a great time screaming there.
And then you see the Queensboro Bridge looming ahead, and you realize, how am I going to get all the way up there from here?
And you're watching the ants going over the bridge because you're so far away, and you're going to be one of them.
You can see the bicyclists who are ahead of you on the bridge. And were you guys anxious about that?
I was a little bit, but I thought that was one of the hardest hills to get up and over.
Yeah, I was anxious about it simply because of the energy I had conserved in me, only because FDR, we were talking before about going down the East River to the start point, we were driving south, and we're driving south down the FDR, so you have the same wind factor happening. So it was I was very exhausted, so I was worried if I didn't have the energy, but I got really lucky, and I just picked a good gear to go at, and slow but steady made it to the top of Queensboro.
I was feeling the same way. I was wearing a windbreaker just to make sure, you know, I wasn't caught in the rain like last year. It was pouring rain. I really didn't want to relive anything, so I wore a little bit extra just in case. I was willing to be a little hotter. If I overheated, I'd, you know, figure out a way around it, so every time I would speed up, my coat would turn into a parachute with the wind just filling it up. And I finally just was like, I'll just go a little easier.
Well, you mentioned the rain last year, and yeah, it was perfect weather this year. But we actually went to the city 2 days early from Long Island, and we had to ride to a train on Friday. Now, I don't know if you recall, but Friday here was a deluge. And as we're getting on our bikes, getting ready to ride to the train, the skies really opened up, and we heard a clap of thunder. And at that point, I'm like, Kyle, God himself is saying, this is a bad idea. What do we do? And you were just, you had this momentum saying, you know, you can only get so wet, and you just got to keep going.
And we had grocery bags on our feet.
We did. It was very fashionable, plastic bags.
I didn't want us to get our shoes soaked because I knew it would take like 2 days for them to dry completely. So if it was going to rain on the way commuting into the city, I grabbed like 4 shopping bags because I knew in a pinch you could just tie them around your feet and keep the water off your feet.
So it was like a 7-minute ride to the train station. We got so totally soaked, but we got on the train, and by the time we were in Manhattan, we were pretty much dry. So yeah, you were right. You can only get so wet, and it wasn't miserable at all. It was really kind of like, how much of this can I handle? How wet can I possibly get?
It's not anything to play around with, though, because the combinations, when you get the wind and the water, you get just chilled straight to the bone. So you got
to
be careful.
You have to watch, you know, slipping on things, and you have to be careful. You must be alert at all times. Getting back to the ride, though, getting over the Queensboro Bridge, first big challenge, but once you get over it and you're going down.
Yeah, that hill is amazing.
Into Astoria, that's where they take your picture, because everybody's happy that they're going down the hill. And then you go into Astoria, you ride up to this park underneath the Triborough Bridge. You hang out there. That's like halftime. They give you bananas and snacks. Mountains of bananas, literally. And it's really, it feels good. Then you get back on your bike, and you ride downtown, into downtown Brooklyn. You go over the...
Pulaski.
The, what?
I think it was Pulaski. Right?
Pulaski Bridge. Yeah. Yes, you're right. Not the new Kosciuszko.
No.
That leads you into Brooklyn.
Into downtown Brooklyn.
Yeah, right.
People are waving, very friendly there. And then after you, it takes quite a while, but it's mostly flat. After you pass the Brooklyn Bridge, you get onto the BQE.
Yeah.
And it's kind of similar to the FDR, where, you know, there are bikes going south and cars going north and people are honking. And there's a couple of hills on the BQE, too, that you have to contend with in quick succession. And then after that, you wind up going through Bay Ridge, not actually through it, but on the BQE next to it. And that's when the Verrazano looms ahead of you. And that's the part I always dreaded up until this year. And how'd you guys fare on the Verrazano, the last part of it?
I think we did great.
I was fine on the Verrazano.
The Verrazano was not as bad, or everyone said that's the worst part.
It goes
for so long,
though.
It does go for long, and you just got to take your time.
Did you guys notice, because I was pointing it out to Cole, to keep going, they had signs on the pavement.
That's
yes.
And I kept reading different signs. What were they saying? Stuff like, you can do it, or you will do it.
You can, you will, yeah, everything.
And I kept saying that. We kept reading the signs.
Finish strong, all of that encouragement. It's the perfect time to be reading it. And I was huffing and puffing. Like I said, I got excited for the finish. And
right.
I'm like, oh, man, I'm really going to get some speed here. I started pedaling, maybe getting into some gears that were a little more heroic than I had been in the previous parts of the ride. So, and then my coat started kind of dragging me back. I was huffing and puffing. So I took a little bit of a moment to prepare myself, and then I got going, and I was really, really huffing and puffing on the Verrazano, but I made it and felt pretty good.
And then you go down the Verrazano, which is even better feeling than going down the Queensboro because it lasts a lot longer.
Oh, yeah.
When you're at the bottom of that, you wind up in this massive park, which is where the party happens, the celebration. Even got a medal. We all got medals.
Yeah.
Proud of these medals.
Listen to this. That's a serious medal. It's the 40th anniversary of the Five-Borough Bike Ride. So
40 years, 40 miles.
40 miles, 40 years. Wow, I didn't realize it's the same number.
I didn't make the connection either. That's cool.
Wow.
Your dad made the connection.
Yeah, and then after all that, you still have to go through Staten Island, but it's only 3 miles. And I think the last mile is basically you standing on line waiting for the Staten Island ferry to take you to Lower Manhattan,
right,
which is when it's all over.
Right.
And that's the Five-Borough Bike Ride. So congratulations, guys, for finishing.
Thanks for turning us on to it.
We love it.
If it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't have done it. You've been talking about it a couple of years now.
Yeah,
gladly.
Hopefully even more people will participate next time, thanks to what you guys are doing.
You know what I love about this ride, and I kind of equate it to a lot of different things, and we were talking about it off the air before we got on the air, is that when you take on a bicycle marathon ride like this, Cole and I signed up for it, and my wife, Cole's mom, and Cole's sister, Andy, they thought we were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, you guys are you're not taking this seriously. And we were like, we're going to do it. But secretly, we both knew we better prepare for this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we did. But to sum up some of this, what you guys were talking about is, life is like a bicycle ride. It's like getting on a bike and keep on pedaling through the rain. And it's just an amazing experience.
The more you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like we prepared ourselves for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you can have a party at home, it's always great to have a party once in a while at home because it'll make you clean up your house a little bit,
get
your act together. Mm-hmm. Or if you're going to go sing a song, you're going to practice, you're going to rehearse for it, you got to get yourself together. And these goals, these things really, really made a difference for Cole and I to get ourselves together.
Yeah.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned singing a song, because that leads us into our next topic here. You're a songwriter.
Yes.
You've been a songwriter for how long now?
Since I was five.
Five.
Yeah.
You wrote a song at five.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow, okay. And some of our local listeners have probably heard you on these airwaves or maybe seen you at a concert. You've been putting out CDs. In fact, you put out a CD recently called Time Machine, which is really an awesome one. That's been played on this
radio
station.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
You want to tell us something about the CD?
Sure. Time Machine is my seventh album, and it revolves around life, and love, and my family. My life, people say, what do you do? And I pretty much tell everyone that I make sawdust and music for a living. That is my life.
Yeah, because you also restore everything. In fact, let me tell folks, I met you because of Superstorm Sandy.
That's right.
When all, there was all kinds of devastation around us, and I was asking, is there anybody that can fix this? And your name came up, and I contacted you, and you were able to make it as if nothing had happened and restore something old to the way it looked.
Which is the greatest compliment you can get when you're in this field, is to, I like to make things to look like they've always been there, even if I just put them there.
Wow. And, you know, to me, that alone is a life's achievement, you know, a lifetime achievement. But to be doing all this music at the same time, that is truly incredible. And so you've managed to capture a lot of your life. I see pictures of old cars. I see houses and just, you know, things from the past and the present. And Time Machine is just a great title for
Time Machine is about my pop's pickup truck. And I rode in that truck for the first time when he bought it, brand new. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I loved that truck so much, he gave it to me. And it sat behind my shop for about a year until my daughter got her license, and we needed an extra vehicle. So I sold my brand new pickup truck and took on Pop's truck as a vehicle.
Wow.
And I wrote songs in the cab of this truck, you know, when it was sitting behind my shop. And one of them is Time Machine.
Wow. That is truly incredible. And that love of automobiles, too, is something that I think we can identify with. And
oh, yeah.
Kyle, you certainly can.
Yeah, and restoring things. When you have, like, antique stuff, there's a lot of ways to do it. There's even more wrong ways to do it. And I think the art is slowing down, kind of hearing whatever you're repairing, hearing what it needs, and finding the right solution. And that spans whether it's woodworking, rehabilitation for vehicles and other things.
Now, we're going to play a piece from this. Which song?
Time Machine.
Time Machine, the title track.
Yeah, I figure if we're talking about it, let's play it.
That sounds great.
Okay, well, we're going to hear Time Machine from the album Time Machine, from Andrew Fortier, here on Off the Wall.
She's an old black pickup truck. I remember when she was young, and Pop brought her home. I rode shotgun back when time stood still. Sitting on a front bench seat, looking out of her windshield as if it was a 3D driving movie screen. Passing through each scene, rolling along, listening to my father's narration of how it used to be when he was my age. Rolling along, world stretched out as far as the imagination, as far as the mind's eye can see. Rolling along in our time machine. She's resting up on blocks in my backyard. Some Sunday mornings you'll find me in her care, listening to the radio start her up, engulfed in a puff of smoke. And as it dissipates, transports me to a place of all that used to be, and all that sense of carefree life. And
find this brand new sheep rolling along in our time machine. I'm sure there's things that I would fix, knowing what I know. Take away all the hurt, or maybe that's what holds us. Maybe that's the glue. Maybe that's what makes us all so beautiful. And if I could visit the future, I'd bring back a cure. I'd fill up the bed of this truck with all the time I lost. And all my family would be right here riding along with me in my time machine.
Wow, and the title track from Time Machine from Andrew Fortier is with us in the studio today. That's a great song.
Oh, thanks.
The romance of a pickup truck, an old black pickup truck. And it means so much to you. This is all from the heart. This is all real.
Yeah, one Sunday morning, my wife actually came out, and she was looking for me. And behind my shop, this truck was up on blocks, but I would start it every Sunday morning and listen to NPR and have my coffee.
I didn't listen to USB.
Well, I love USB, especially on a Sunday morning. You got Charlie.
All right. Yeah, what comes after Charlie? We're going to test you on this. you've listened to Jim Dexter.
Oh, yeah. I love Jim.
You know, I used to have that slot.
Oh, really?
I used to do the Tuesday morning slot. This is a bit of trivia, folks. And I would have, I was the one who started with Mike Juhas calling in from Wisconsin to give the weather forecast.
Oh, wow.
For Wisconsin. That was before the internet. So there was no way we had anybody from Wisconsin listening. But he'd still call in every Tuesday morning and give the weather forecast. And that tradition carried on into Jim Dexter's show. I don't know if they still do it. They might.
I don't think so. But my first time ever on USB was in 1993. With Scott McDonald in the evening, and we did like an hour radio program. It was amazing. It was just great to be part of that.
Well, it's great to be a part of this whole scene because local radio, local musicians, and the worldwide audience. It's an amazing combination.
It really is.
Yeah. We're here with Andrew and his son Cole, and I probably should point out at this point that Cole, you are also a musician.
That is correct. Yes.
Did you write a song at age 5 as well?
No, I think 7, actually.
You know, 7? Funny.
I was thinking about this before.
A late bloomer. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. But so now, I should also point out, you guys have a concert because you're both musicians.
Yes.
You both perform together.
Right.
And you've got a concert coming up in just a couple of weeks here on Long Island. And we should let people know about this. It's Saturday, May 20th at the First United Methodist Church in Port Jefferson Village. It starts at 8 p.m.
Yes, we play in the sanctuary, which is so beautiful. The sound in there is amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, it is incredible.
If you go to gpjac.org, what does that stand for? Greater Port Jefferson Arts Council. That's
right.
Okay.
That's correct. They put it on.
You'll be able to get tickets there. But you're basically having a concert there. But tell us something about your experiences with music. What instruments do you play? What kinds of music do you like?
My first instrument and my main instrument I consider really is the piano.
Okay.
But yeah, I've always ventured off into other instruments and musical genres too, which I could get to in a minute.
Uh-huh.
But I sing, I dabble a little bit in drums, a little bit.
You dabble in drums?
Dabble.
Okay.
Choice
He's great.
Uh-huh. I really like percussion instruments. I could play quite a few percussion instruments. Like, for example, this Christmas, I got set of percussion instruments, that I've always wanted, but, you know, I never realized that I would actually have. And
What's it called? What kind of instrument?
It's a vibraphone.
Vibraphone?
Which is a type of xylophone.
Okay.
It's got the most beautiful sound ever. It's such an incredible sound.
It's a classic.
It's beautiful.
From the 60s.
60s, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Very. It's and the quality obviously is so much better. And if you can get older instruments.
What is your house like? It must have music going all the time.
Yes, and no, it doesn't stop.
We have to mention that Cole's sister and my daughter, Andy Juliet, is part of our family.
I was going to get to the fact that there's yet another musician in your household. I don't want to overwhelm people too much, but okay, we're up to two now. We'll get to three in a moment. But you guys just are filling your house with all kinds of different instrumentation, all kinds of songwriting.
Yeah.
What's that like?
It's wonderful.
When did you realize that Cole had such abilities?
At the youngest age. I'd say by five, he was totally into music.
Wow.
He used to, actually, he didn't speak as much, but he would listen very, very, very intently to music.
Well, do you think that's the key, to have kids listen to music as they're growing up?
Well, he wanted to. Like, you can tell it caught his attention immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just branched out of it, you know. He just would come into my studio and touch the piano, and I knew he had a feel for it, and I knew anything you put in front of him, he would learn how to play it. And so we got him a piano 1 year for Christmas, and then one year I said, "You want some drums?" And he's like, no drums. And but a buddy of mine...
What kid says no drums?
Yeah, buddy of mine said, "You can have these drums," so we gave him these drums, put him in the playroom, and before you know it, out from the playroom is drumming. It's beautiful.
All right, Cole, what instrument can't you play? Sounds like you can play them all.
Guitar.
Oh, okay.
There will be no guitar playing in my life. Actually, though, I do...
Don't ever say that. That's so not
I don't think... I really don't think so. If I do, though, I will reflect back on this day and I will prove myself wrong. But
I've always looked at them with like quizzical expression. They look like a lot of hand-eye that I just
But I do play ukulele, actually, and I because that's another... Going back to things picking up around the house, there was a ukulele that I'd always stare at, just magically... appearing in my house. So then, I don't know where that ukulele came from. It's a baritone ukulele, though.
Uh-huh.
And instead of writing with regular ukulele tuning, I've changed the tuning to different chords and have written my own music on ukulele. So I've actually been doing that a lot more recently.
Wow.
But other than
customizing
that,
the instrument for exactly the sound you want to use in a particular theme or song.
But other than that, the strings aren't really working out for me. Oh, I should also mention, I do play clarinet, too. I love the clarinet.
How do you decide what you're going to play at what particular moment if you're so good at so many different things?
Well, I mean, it really depends. I mean, for like a standard show, I usually am on piano.
Okay.
For the church show coming up, I will be playing vibraphone on some songs and clarinet. You know, some backgrounds and stuff.
Well, your dad's got guitars, right? So you don't have to worry about not knowing
that. Yeah, as far as my solo music goes, I'm really just playing piano and singing, and except sometimes, well, some exceptions, some songs on the ukulele. Very, you know, like maybe a few.
Well, okay, now let's talk about Andy. Not to be confused with Andrew.
Right.
Your daughter, Cole's sister, and a tremendous singer. She, I have her CD here. And we're going to actually go out with a piece by Andy Fortier. And how did she get involved in music?
Well, she would always come up with me during a tour and perform on stage very easily. She would climb up on the stage and sing. So how did she get into it? She got into it, I think, pretty much by being around it.
Mm-hmm.
But she also plays the clarinet, and she's a natural, just like Cole.
Wow. And when was the first time the three of you actually played together?
That's a great question.
Yeah. I guess.
It really depends. I think... Really, we started getting together when we started doing shows for the Bitter End.
The Christmas show.
The Christmas show. There's a great group of musicians, wonderful group of musicians in the city called the Songwriter Circle. And they do a Christmas show every year at the Bitter End. It's really worth checking out. Some fantastic artists come by. But we were involved to do it, and me and Andy and Dad would come by, and we'd write some original Christmas music for it. So that was really when we started realizing, well, it doesn't have to just be Christmases. We could start dabbling in other genres and other
songs
concepts
together.
And songs. So that's kind of when we really started. I mean, Andy and my dad have been playing for years. And, of course, I've been playing alongside them, but I guess the bitter end is when we really started.
That's when we formed like a trio, mm-hmm. you know, with harmonies and everything.
Yeah, the songwriter's circle really does emphasize that, which is critical, I think, right? Would you, in so far as telling the stories that go with the music,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. That's why it's a songwriter's circle. It's usually famous songwriters that perform their songs. Maybe the song is famous from another artist, but they're the ones who've written it. It's kind of based on that.
Yeah, any song you like listening to, it's going to have somebody there that wrote and thought through how
that's
those
correct,
words
yeah.
are put together, and then came up with how it would then work its way into, I guess, a melody. I don't know the terms and stuff.
Well, it's a great community in New York City, and yeah. I happened to get asked onto it, onto the songwriters' circle, I would say about 10 years ago or maybe a little bit longer, when I had a successful song called I Say Grace that was recorded and performed all over the world by an international artist named Haley Westenra. And that song is definitely what I like to consider my 15 minutes of fame, or 7.5 minutes of fame, because I really need another 7.5 minutes.
Don't we all?
I know.
Yeah, I think you've got more coming. I really do. Because every time I play your music for people, they're really amazed by it. And that goes for both of you. On that, I'd like to play something that features all three of you guys.
Great.
Andrew, Cole, and Andy. I should also mention your wife, your mom. She does the photography for your album.
Yes,
so there's
Melanie.
Even more
right,
talent
yes.
in this family that you cannot believe.
Yes,
she's the glue. She's the one who keeps us, together. Three artists in one household is enough. And my wife is
well. She's definitely an artist too.
Yes, she is
a photographic artist. And,
yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, and just seeing the kinds of things that she captures. You sitting. By the water or the pickup truck or all kinds of really cool images.
Yeah, she's responsible for it all.
But tell us something about the song we're about to hear. This is something new.
Okay, so this song is a song that was actually written. It's called When We're Together. And it was really written around the holiday, the holiday show. It was just every year I write a new song for the show when we get called to come back on. Mm-hmm. And it's usually around the holiday. So this is... Not that it's a holiday song, but it's about how great it is to be together.
Now, I believe in order, we will hear your voice, we'll hear Andy's voice, who's not here today, and we'll hear Cole's voice.
That's correct.
All right. So the name of the song again is?
When We're Together.
All right. Here we go.
Let's take all our worries and put them away. Now that we are all together, nothing could be better. And oh, how I love, oh, how I love when we're together. Seems there's never enough. Definite. It's so loud.
Wow. When we're together, sorry, I hit the microphone. When we're together, how shall I say this? The Fortier family?
No, we actually like to call ourselves. We have a name for our family trio, and eventually we're going to drop the family trio, which is going to be called Tricycle.
Tricycle.
Yeah.
I like that.
Tricycle. Yeah.
So instead of doing like you know, the Ramones or Doobie Brothers or bands like that that pretend they're related when they're not. You guys are related, but you're going to go with a different name that doesn't emphasize that.
Yeah, it's not like we're not. We love the fact that we're related, but
it's catchier.
We want to be Jessica. You know, a little bit more.
But you don't want to sell that part of.
Yeah, that's not what it's about.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, that's. I mean, that highlighted all of your voices, and I think that's. And Cole, I know your voice is forever changing and developing into new things, just as your instrument progressions are as well. So it's fascinating to hear.
It's really a great recording, yeah.
Wow. Now, we were also talking during the break about some of your musical theories and passions. I know that this might be unusual for people who are, you're 15?
Yeah, 15. Turning 16 soon, actually.
Yeah, well, many 15-year-olds, I don't know, maybe this is true, maybe this is not true, but you seem to have a particular passion for music of the 70s. I don't know how many 15-year-olds can say that.
Yeah, I mean, most people ask me what my favorite decade was, I'd have to definitely say the 70s, but always, when it comes to music, it's really been, day by day, it's always by your mood, of course, like what you want to listen to, what time period, what kind of song, but, you know, I mean, it's almost as if, like, it's an eternal path. I mean, I'm always exploring different routes, though I will say the 70s is my favorite. There's so much other decades and genres that I'm always flowing into and mm-hmm. discovering. You know, I mean, right now, in the moment, I think it's really the later 70s, early 80s. I really enjoy that sound.
Really? Okay.
Very much so.
What is it that you think is unique about that period that makes it so interesting?
The production. I'm a really big fan of big production, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just very, I think, actually, you know what, I think it'd be the musicianship. I think there's a certain distinct but incredible quality to the musicianship. Mm-hmm. I mean, in all the music I listen to, of course I look for a great musicianship.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, just something, I mean, for a specific example, I think we've talked about this before. In the later 70s and early 80s, there's an obscure genre I've discovered due to the magic of the internet and YouTube, and it's called West Coast AOR.
West Coast AOR.
Yes, and it is
That's album-oriented rock, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's by some people on the internet I've discovered, most people just call it West Coast. I mean, and it's such a specific sound. It's really from the late 70s, early 80s. It's pretty much soft rock based, yeah, rock based, but it's really specifically in the LA area. And, you know, you're dealing with, and what's great about it is though it's many different artists that were involved in it, it's all pretty much the same studio musicians. It was the L.A. scene. So you got, you know, all these members from Toto coming around. So I guess
Toto, I remember them.
So, but, I mean, not like the Toto you hear from, like, Rosanna. It's like, you know, just the studio musicians. So Jeff Porcaro really is, in my opinion, was the king of session drumming. Like, you know, I'm looking at all these album credits, he's playing on everything.
Wow.
So you have all these session musicians. I mean, and, like, the boss, you know, like, even on Boz Scaggs' classic album, Silk Degrees, you have the Toto members on it.
That's with Lido Shuffle?
Lido Shuffle, yeah. Lowdown.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
What can I say?
Yeah, you're taking me back to high school here. That's incredible.
That's a fantastic album, but that's a whole other discussion. So basically, it's the musicianship that really overall I find is fascinating. And it's not in a popular genre, but I think it really was more of the process of creating those albums and working with those musicians and writing those very finely produced and sophisticated music that really I find fascinating.
Now, who would you say is one of your favorite either artists or bands from that period, and why do you think that they're really superb? Some of your passions are. I've heard you extrapolate about some of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question because it's so. Though I do listen to the albums around that period, I find it more song-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll click on songs. There'll be, like, artists, well, only, like, one song by them, but then there'll be, like, other songs. I mean, I think if I had to pick one off the top of my head, then again, it'll change tomorrow, yeah, obviously, because it is so song-oriented, it truly is. But I guess, off the top of my head right now, I'd probably be Vernon Barnes, who were a duo.
I don't think I even know them.
I don't know a lot of, there's not, I mean, it's hard to research about some of these artists, because they're not that popular.
And how do you do that? How do you research this? For people out there who might be interested.
Going on the internet and looking, trying to look at websites and trying, I mean, most people, you actually find more information from the YouTube comment section, because it's usually people who somehow were part of that scene or somehow
Wait, you find a positive use for the YouTube comment section?
Yes.
This has never happened before. Wow. Okay.
Yes, I do. And it's usually people who, you know, were a part of the scene or knew the scene somehow by, you know, in the 80s, by mixtapes, or somehow knew the scene. So, I mean, but Vernon Barnes, incredible musician, really complex writing.
Mm-hmm.
We were just on the way over here listening to Richard Page. Was in a band before Mr. Mister, and they were called Pages. I wonder why. But that's considered pretty much West Coast AOR. They're highly regarded, extremely technical musicianship. Writing is impeccable. And it's actually quite diverse as far as genres go, but that's, you know, some of the songs around that era that they wrote, that really comes to mind as also some of my favorites. I mean, I could really, it would really be easy if I just looked at a list, and then, you know, because they're all good for different types of West Coast.
Yeah,
I think Cole tends to find the things that slip, you know, between the cracks.
Yeah, that, and like, overlooked, maybe.
Absolutely, and I love to, I mean, he schools me on a lot of things. I mean, I missed a lot of things growing up, and he's helping me catch up with a lot, with concerts. We're constantly going to concerts.
You're seeing some of these artists now,
and they're
right?
Fantastic, yeah. Fantastic. I've become a My most favorite artist that Cole turned me on to is Steve Hackett.
Okay.
The original guitarist from
Genesis.
Genesis.
Yep. That's a whole other genre.
Oh,
it's prog.
But it's amazing.
Prog rock,
you know?
Okay.
It's a lot of fun to be part of that, and it's really fun to be next to your son and standing up on chairs and screaming and standing ovations after every
Not
song.
Not on chairs, but standing up.
Yeah,
that's a little dangerous.
Yeah, standing ovations after every song, yeah. I mean, and deservedly so, these artists. I mean, we just saw Tony Bennett together, too, and he
was That
was
wonderful.
Amazing.
He was incredible.
Cole, you were talking to me a little bit about 80s music, which I grew up in that era. I know, like, a lot of the hip-hop and electronic music, but there's so much, like, new wave and early 80s stuff that was really good that I just missed.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to hear your perspective on technology and the challenges that musicians face. What could you say about that, maybe, that struck you with some of your latest research?
It's funny. I just realized this because this is going to bring us full circle. We were talking about that after Astoria in Queens.
Yeah, that's right.
We were riding on our bikes talking about this.
No,
stuff.
You have great conversations on bicycles.
You do. You truly do.
That is right.
No, I was really, to sum it up, trying to remember exactly what I said, but to sum it up, quickly, my opinion for the musicians in the 80s, the 80s was a boom in technology. As far as drum machines go and new synths, it was really something, it was really capitalizing on the creativity of the 70s and just introducing totally new technology. So as far as the 80s go, from my opinion, artists went two directions. They could either utilize the technology in a fashion that could create their music in a very symbolic fashion to the time period, yet still be timeless and listened to today. So you could say, oh, that sounds like the 80s, but it still resonates with people today. Or people oversaturated and overindulged in using the technology and created what can be pretty good music, but is very much almost dated and very much unfortunately lost and trapped into the time period with that technology, which some of it's good, but it's just, it's an oversaturation.
Now, there's also some new Japanese music you're interested in today, right?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Oh, that's also by the magic of YouTube. So, you know, we're talking about West Coast AOR. So, basically, I clicked on this album cover, and it was, you know, finely drawn animation of, like, a guy outside with a palm, you know, palm tree. So, it's like, oh, this has got to be a West Coast album. And I heard the guitar riff, and I was instantly hooked, and my musical preferences ever so much changed. That was really when I started delving into international music. It was by, the album's called For You. It's by Tatsuo Yamashita. And basically, the Japanese music I've been listening to is pretty much West Coast AOR, but better. It's a lot more funk influences. I really like funk music. That's probably why I like West Coast stuff. It's a lot more influences of funk. It's a little bit more jazz influences, and the productions are a lot more wilder, I feel. I feel like it's less contained than the American version. The West Coast AOR is still great, but the specific genre is Japanese city pop. And it's very, you know, it's almost tropical sounding. It's very, but it's also got a city feel to it. It's extremely lively, very vibrant, beautiful.
And is this new music?
No, this is music around, and I compare it to West Coast AOR because it's right around the same time of West Coast AOR, late 70s, early 80s. So some really been checking out some incredible music, and it's almost, and you know, people always ask me, oh, well, they're singing in Japanese. Well, I think it's kind of beautiful.
Mm-hmm,
I tried translating the lyrics, but it's insignificant to me, the words. It's just,
well, sometimes
it's a language of its own.
Sometimes the words in English songs are insignificant as well.
Exactly.
It's the melody,
exactly.
it's the overall sound.
But it's truly a hidden, beautiful creation, Japanese city pop.
Wow. Well, as you all can see, we can have this conversation for hours. Cole, I hope you wind up doing a radio show here because I think you've got so much
to share.
Thank
you very much. Thank you.
and you'll find this place to be an amazing source of all kinds of sounds. I know it's definitely changed my life. The magic of music. And you guys, I think, personify that more than anybody with your family and just the things that you've done. Now, Andrew, just to let people know, to get your CDs, they just have to go to your website, right?
Yeah, andrewfortier.com.
Okay, it's F-O-R-T-I-E-R. And you have that concert coming up on Saturday, May 20th, 8 p.m., First United Methodist Church in Port Jeff Village. Go to gpjac.org, Greater Port Jefferson Arts Council, for ticket information there. And what do you guys have planned for new projects? Anything else?
Yeah, we're actually in the midst of finishing up our latest album, which is based under the Tricycle title, and that should be out, I would say, probably late summer, early fall.
All right. Well, any time would fly, and we're out of time, but I want to close with a song by Andy.
Andy Juliet,
your daughter, Cole's sister, and she put out an album called Bloom.
Yes.
And this is a piece called Drop, which I think is a completely different style than what we've been listening to so far.
Yes, yes.
All right, listen, I want to wish you guys the best. Thanks for riding with us on Sunday.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Hope we have more adventures like that, and hope we inspire more people to do that as well. Totally. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, with your feedback. Until next week, Emmanuel and Kyle.
Good night.
See ya.
From the word go, I want you to know, I'd rather be all alone, oh, oh. But you said my name.
time you're near me, you're just setting me up. Every time you're near me, you are setting me up. Every time you're near me, you're just setting me up. Cause you're setting me up.
Okay, it is 7:02 p.m. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. This is Bob Anero filling in for Finn's Revolution tonight from 7 to 10 p.m. And we are going to have more new WUSB voices joining us tonight. Momentarily, we will have Scott joining us. Let me play a tune from Water Street Blues Band while we're getting set up.